Today I have a wonderful show for you. I'm going to talk with Tanya Harter Pierce. She is the author of Outsmart Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work. Why bludgeon your cancer to death with conventional treatments that can be toxic and harmful to your entire body? When you outsmart your cancer, only the cancer cell dies, not your healthy cells. And this interview will help you to understand real life stories of people who have completely removed and recovered from their cancer, from lung, breast, prostate, colon, kidney, brain, bone, pancreatic, lymphatic, and other types of cancer using non-toxic approaches. And among other things, you'll learn today about alternative approaches and why they're so effective, and the unique characteristics that are common to cancer cells, how to evaluate mainstream conventional treatments, and what women need to know about their hormones and cancer, and how to alkalize your body, and why it's important to alkalize your body. So stay tuned for the next hour as I talk with Tanya Harter Pierce about how to outsmart your cancer. I'm Dr. Ann West. You're listening to Truth from the Source. I'd like to welcome Tanya Harter Pierce for coming on the show. Thank you so much, Tanya. It's fantastic to have you on.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here with you today.
Now, Tanya, you've written this book, Outsmart Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work. And it's very, very important. You've obviously done plenty of research to be able to compile this. Tell me why you focused on doing this.
Well, by profession, I'm a marriage, family, child counselor, and I had actually closed down my practice and went into early retirement to work on becoming a writer and author. And I was working on another project when a family member of mine was diagnosed with cancer. And mm-hmm. this was the first time I had ever had to deal with someone very close to me dealing with life-threatening cancer. And my family member was not given a good prognosis and wanted to look into alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time I had, and this was about 4.5 years ago, and I had the time and the ability to do a lot of research, and I thought it was only going to involve maybe 2 or 3 months worth. And what happened was I started finding out so much amazing information that I just couldn't believe that there were countless people here in our own country in America and also in other places in the world who were recovering from their cancer many times when conventional medicine had given up on them, mm-hmm. and they were recovering with methods that the mainstream medical authorities were not recognizing and insurance companies were not paying for,
mm-hmm.
and doctors were denying existed, and these people were getting well. So what I wanted to do was put all the information that I could into a book. Partly because I found that there's so much information out there, it's hard to sort through, and when you're diagnosed with cancer, you don't have time to spend the 2.5 years that I did researching
mm-hmm.
all this.
2.5 years?
Approximately,
yeah. So your 2 to 3 months really got extended.
Absolutely, because I just couldn't believe what I was finding out.
And now, when you were on that research path, you obviously came across things you'd never heard of before, and what was it that you were looking for specifically that made some treatments better than others that actually got into the book?
Well, what I ended up doing with the book, and all of this just sort of gelled over the first year, I discovered that there were a number of alternative treatments out there that have really long track records over many years, some
right.
of them over decades,
uh-huh.
and also have a large amount of scientific evidence and study to back them up.
Uh-huh.
And so what I decided was I was going to take the most common treatments that are obtainable today that have really good track records. In other words, try to put the descriptions of the best alternative non-toxic treatments in this book, and I came up with 12. And so there's a variety of approaches in Outsmart Your Cancer.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically a book for people who have decided that the common treatments of surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation, or at least chemotherapy and radiation, which are the toxic ones,
mm-hmm.
if for those people who have decided that those are either not working for them for their cancer or those are just not the way they want to go,
mm-hmm.
then this book is available to give them their options of non-toxic alternative approaches that are really effective. And in order to make sure that they were effective, I also talked to at least over 100 different cancer survivors who had used various approaches in this book. And as you may have seen when you read through the book, some of the case stories in the book are taken from publications or doctors' newsletters, but most of them are actually people that I personally interviewed myself and, took down their case histories. And my background as a counselor really helped me in that sense in terms of taking their case stories. And I was just amazed. I was coming across people, some of whom had actually been given up on by conventional medicine and told to go on hospice.
Mm.
And then chose, now it is, I will caution people that it is harder for a person to achieve a recovery if they get to that late stage point,
mm-hmm.
because the body can become so damaged by then.
Mm-hmm.
However, there were people who were given up by conventional medicine and went on to have a complete recovery using a non-toxic alternative approach.
Mm-hmm.
And if I might just go on one more minute, I don't want to drag this on too long, but one of the things that really amazed me was when I found out that these alternative approaches for cancer are not just all about going to your health food store and buying common supplements to boost your immune system. That's actually a common misconception. So sometimes that does work for some people, and if they do it right and really change their diet and their lifestyle, they can have a recovery. But what I found is that there are actually very potent approaches that are really specific for killing cancer. In fact, some of them are so specific that you can't combine one approach with another.
Uh-huh.
Or they might cancel each other out.
Oh, right.
And so these are very powerful approaches, and they're, by and large, they're mostly things you cannot buy at your local health food store.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, at the back of each chapter on the treatments, I actually have listed contact information for how to get that particular approach and the general price that it's going to cost.
Uh-huh, excellent. What in your research did you find was the main causes of the cancer in the people that you spoke to?
Well, this was a very important issue for me to address, I felt, because one of the things I came across was a lot of people developing cancer and being totally surprised that they had developed cancer. Many people who said, gee, I've never smoked, I'm not a drinker, you know, I've lived a pretty clean life. Why did I get cancer?
Right.
And so this is, knowing the different causes of cancer is also important for people who have cancer so that they can understand the disease. Because once you understand something, it's so much easier to fight it.
Right.
And so I do have a long chapter that goes into many of the different details of what a lot of different causes are. And just to kind of summarize, what I found is that cancer, malignant, life-threatening cancer, has been around forever. And it's been in human beings, and it's been in animals, and even in plants to some extent for millennia. However, the rate of cancer that we are suffering from and seeing today is completely unnatural. Just to give an idea, right now, one in every four deaths in America is due to cancer.
Yeah,
that means
very high.
Yeah, each one of us has a 25% chance of dying from cancer, whereas 100 years ago, we each only had a 3% chance of dying from cancer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So just in that short period of time, and that period, this last 100 years, corresponds with the modern industrialization of our country. So
yes.
What I discovered, and there's a lot of research to back it up, is that some of the prime causes of cancer are due to toxins and carcinogens in our environment, food, and water.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those are from pesticides that are put on the crops, and we ingest those. Many of them are from herbicides, even, that are put on the crops. Some of them are other things that are more due to modern lifestyles, such as synthetic birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy, which actually imbalances the hormones in our bodies in such a way that can actually cause cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's so many other things. Right now, I think a lot of people would be shocked to know that NutraSweet, which is
the
most common sweetener in our diet drinks and other diet foods, is actually carcinogenic, and right. that has been proven in studies, but right. a lot of that proof has been covered up.
Right. It actually has formaldehyde in it.
Yes, it does, and some other really toxic chemicals.
Right.
And so there's just many, many, and I do go into a lot of details of some of the different types of things that can cause cancer. And so once you learn what all the different sources might be, then, and of course you may not know for any one case what specifically it was. I tend to think people largely come down with cancer as a combination of causes.
Mm-hmm.
And also including that we don't eat really healthy, wholesome diets as much as we used to because of so many processed foods. So we're not getting the nutrition we need.
Mm-hmm. So living a preventative lifestyle is obviously a much better way to live than to wait to get a diagnosis.
Yes, and actually my book is not specifically focused on preventing cancer because it's actually for people who are dealing with active
yes.
cancer. But what I found was that if you understand the alternative approaches that are working for people with cancer, then you gain a great understanding of how to prevent cancer yourself because many aspects of these approaches can be used.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are dietary aspects. Others are specific formulas or treatments that can be used in a sort of maintenance way. For instance, there's one particular approach in my book called ProtoCell, which is a really unique formula that's easy to use. It's not relatively expensive. And many people have actually decided to use ProtoCell even though they're not diagnosed with cancer, but they'll use it for maybe 6 months just in case they have a little cancer developing and they want to get rid of it.
Tell us about it.
ProtoCell is a fascinating approach, and it's one of the more powerful ones because I've come across so many cases of people who have actually dealt with metastasized cancers and late-stage cancers who have had complete recoveries using this formula. And there's a long history to it, which we don't really have time to go into, but I can say briefly that it was developed by an American chemist, a man named Jim Sheridan, and he came up with the idea for this formula back in 1936,
oh.
believe it or not, and he spent about 50 years, the following 50 years or so, developing and refining this treatment, and he actually did develop it as a cancer treatment and tested it on laboratory mice and even in official cancer laboratories and had phenomenal results. He was getting to the point where all of something like 80% of his laboratory mice were having complete recoveries with this formula.
Wow, that's incredible.
For cancer, yeah. And I do describe the theory of how it works, but it's quite complex in a biochemical sort of way, but the general idea is that the ProtoCell formula targets, and this is the basis for my entire book and why I called the book Outsmart Your Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you use an alternative non-toxic approach, what you do is you target, in many ways, you target those characteristics of cancer cells that are different from normal healthy cells.
And maybe you could tell us how they're different.
That would be great. I would love to. One of the main prime differences between cancer cells and normal healthy cells was proven by a two-time Nobel Prize-winning scientist named Dr. Otto Warburg back in the 1930s and 40s. And what he was able to prove, and other scientists have followed up on the research and proven it as well, is that the prime difference between cancer cells and healthy cells is that cancer cells are mainly anaerobic. And that means that and that is in reference to their cell respiration, which refers to how they obtain energy for themselves. So what you have is that all the normal healthy cells in your body and my body and everybody's body use oxygen as their primary source of creating energy for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're aerobic in their cell respiration, and they can metabolize fats and proteins and sugar and a lot of different things. And through the aerobic process, they produce energy very efficiently. However, cancer cells are damaged cells, they're unhealthy cells, and they have reverted to anaerobic cell respiration, which means that they can no longer use oxygen, and they actually use a process called glycolysis, which is the fermentation of sugar, and they become obligate glucose metabolizers, which means that they need glucose to survive. If they don't get enough glucose, they die. And it's all because they use this anaerobic cell respiration. So So cancer cells are anaerobic, healthy cells are aerobic. There's a big difference right there. And this doesn't matter what type of cancer you're talking about. Basically, it's any type of cancer. So what the protocell formula was developed to do, and this was very brilliant by the chemist Jim Sheridan, is a protocell goes into the body and it starts interfering with that anaerobic cell respiration. It basically interferes to such an extent that the cancer cells are no longer able to produce enough ATP or adenosine triphosphate, which is the energy packets that they need. And so the protocell formula interferes with their ability to produce energy, and it's a process kind of like slowly draining the energy in the battery of your car to a point where finally more energy is going out than coming in, and the battery finally dies. And that's what happens with the cancer cells when a person uses protocell.
Is protocell, when you say it's a formula, is it a liquid or a powder or something?
Yes, it's actually a liquid. It comes in a bottle. It's a brown liquid formula, and it's very easy to self-administer at home. What you do is you just take about a quarter to a third of a teaspoonful, either 4 or 5 times a day, depending on your situation. And you can actually administer it to small children. I've got a case in my book of a little girl who was diagnosed with leukemia at age 2. And she went through all the chemotherapy that could be done, but unfortunately her cancer came back. And then the doctors recommended, she was 4 years old by then, and the doctors recommended to her folks that this little girl needed a bone marrow transplant. Well, unfortunately, the parents found out that the girl only had a 5% survival chance with the bone marrow transplant, and they just felt that wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
So they found out about this protocell formula, this liquid formula that's really easy to use, even with kids. And they gave their little 4-year-old girl the protocell formula, and within just a few short months, the doctors could not find any leukemia left in her body,
even with
a bone marrow sample.
Oh, my gosh.
That doesn't mean that every last cancer cell is gone, and that's why when a person uses an alternative approach, they have to keep using it for a while,
yeah.
At least 6 months or a year longer.
Yeah.
But that's what this little girl's family did. They kept giving her the formula because it's completely non-toxic and it's safe to use. And I think they gave it to her for another year or two and then stopped. And she's now 8 years old, normal little girl, going to school, and she hasn't been on any treatment for years.
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah.
What is protocell?
Well, that's the part I've been trying to describe, and it's actually quite complicated. In my book, Outsmart Your Cancer, I do go into the details in much more depth. And it's not an herbal treatment, I will say that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just a combination of vitamins or minerals. Again, there's that misconception that the only way you treat cancer alternatively is just through vitamins and minerals. That's not always the case.
No, no.
In this case, it's a very unique formula that was developed. And it's a little hard to explain, but I do go into more detail in the book.
Is it expensive?
No, and that's one of the beauties of it. Actually, most alternative treatments vary in price quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are extremely expensive and may cost thousands of dollars a month,
though
those are the extreme. In general, most of them cost maybe $200 to $500 a month. However, protocell, this liquid formula that is non-toxic, only costs about $55 to $75 a month, depending on your dosing.
Whoa.
And that's actually like just maybe taking two different supplements.
Do you buy it? Do you have to buy it from a company?
There's only one place in the United States that sells it, and I do give information in my book about how to order it. And it's extremely easy. You can order it by phone, and they'll mail it to you, and you can have it in 3 to 5 days.
I've never heard of this. It's amazing. Yeah, I'm so glad that you're sharing this with us. You know, some of the other treatments that you've written about in your book, I have heard of.
Right.
Brzezinski, in fact.
Oh, good.
He's been on the show a couple of times.
Oh, really? Dr. Brzezinski is a wonderful physician and medical researcher in Houston, Texas, and
yeah.
He's done a fantastic job of creating his own alternative approach. At least it's been alternative until now. I don't know what the FDA is doing about it at the moment.
Yeah, they had quite a struggle, didn't they?
They did. In
yeah.
fact, Dr. Brzezinski had to fight the FDA in court for many years.
Yes.
But at any rate, that's a treatment called antineoplastin therapy, and I'm thrilled that you've had him on your show because
yes.
he's got a wonderful approach.
Yes, and he specifically deals with brain tumors.
That's one of their best responding types. Lymphomas are another type, and that's excellent because lymphomas can be very tough to beat.
Yes. And how does his the price of what he's doing compare to, say, Protocell?
Well, that's one of the only glitches. Actually, Dr. Brzezinski's anti-neoplastin therapy is the most expensive alternative approach I've come across.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, it does tend to cost on average about $7,000 a month or a total of maybe $100,000. And most insurance companies will not cover that.
Right.
However, for those people who can get the money together, and I know some people have, you know, taken out a second mortgage on their house and stuff like that, it can be an extremely powerful approach and has saved the lives of many children with brain tumors or adults with brain tumors and people with lymphomas and some other types of cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Brzezinski Clinic in Houston is very professionally run with really well-qualified doctors. So that is the extreme end of the expensive, and I don't fault the Dr. Brzezinski for it because he actually has to have a very high quality laboratory and he has very high expenses in making this and also inviting the FDA legally.
Yes, he's had quite a journey.
Right, but there's quite a few approaches in the book that people have heard about, and in fact, I wanted to present many of those approaches that are well-known. For instance, the Gerson therapy with a lot of juicing and a lot of detoxification, or some of the herbal approaches like Essiac. Many people have heard of that.
Yes.
Or the Dr. Joanna Budwig's flaxseed oil and cottage cheese.
I've never heard of that one. Tell us about it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. That one was developed by a German biochemist named Dr. Joanna Budwig. And she was really a brilliant scientist and she's no longer alive, but she developed this. What she did was she discovered that there were certain things in the blood of people with cancer. There were certain things missing that weren't missing from normal, healthy people's blood. And she did a lot of research and discovered that people with cancer were missing, in large part, many of the essential fatty acids, particularly the omega-3 essential fatty acids.
Uh-huh.
And she worked out an approach that is quite unique, but it involved using flaxseed oil, or linseed oil, but flaxseed oil is more common, and because that is such a high source of omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, but particularly the omega-3s. Now, what she discovered was that if you just take flaxseed oil, that's good for you, and it's okay, but it's not near as effective as if you combine it with something like cottage cheese. And the reason being that cottage cheese is very high in something called, now I'm just drawing a blank for a moment here, but sulfur-based proteins,
okay.
That's what I was going for.
Okay.
So when you combine these essential fatty acids with sulfur-based proteins, they link together, and the sulfur-based proteins, which are very high in cottage cheese, will actually transport those essential fatty acids much more efficiently to the cells of your body. And then her theory was that cancer develops oftentimes as a result of the cell membranes breaking down in normal healthy cells.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is, in her mind, due to not only toxins in our environment that actually damage our cell walls, but also due to these unhealthy fats, these pseudo-fats or trans fatty acids that we eat so much in our modern diet.
Right, like the homogenized.
Right. Because they go into the cell wall and yet they don't perform all of the right functions that a really good, healthy, essential fatty acid will perform.
Uh-huh.
So what she found was that by diet alone, she could prescribe to patients with cancer this, and in fact, in Germany, she used something called Quark, which was like more like yogurt, but in our country, the most commonly used is cottage cheese.
Uh-huh.
And so she prescribed Quark and flaxseed oil and also a modified diet. And she was having, according to her records, thousands of people with malignant, life-threatening cancer get well.
Amazing.
And Yeah, and I've come across a number of people in this country who have used that approach with great success, and I do present cases in my book of people who have had recoveries using that. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly good for men with prostate cancer, which is one of the more common types of cancers men have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, all of these treatments that you've written about have been tried and tested over and over and over again. So it's,
yes,
you know, because you wonder, flax oil and cottage cheese, how did she come up with that, you know?
Right. Yes. Well, what really amazed me when I started looking into this is we're looking at approaches that were developed in large part by brilliant biochemists or microbiologists, or one of them is an approach in my book called cesium high pH therapy that was developed by an American physicist.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with a medical doctor who, and they did clinical trials and worked with the cesium approach. There have also been medical doctors, such as Dr. Brzezinski. So all of these are really approaches that were developed by scientists and studied, you know, in laboratories first, and have medical reasons why these work, and scientific evidence, and then also have clinical backgrounds that show that they work, and in fact, really work better than conventional medicine. And that's another whole theme of my book, is just trying to explain how dismal the effectiveness of conventional medicine really is for cancer.
Uh-huh.
And that's a very important thing people need to understand right now.
Yes. So if somebody is diagnosed, one of our listeners has been diagnosed, and they're facing, obviously their mind is going to play havoc with them because there's going to be fear involved and confusion and not knowing which way to go. What would you say to them as far as like how to sit down and calmly come to a conclusion as to what treatment to use?
Well, first, I want to say that you really hit on an important point right there, that a cancer diagnosis is probably one of the scariest things anyone can go
yeah.
through. And your mind goes blank, and not only can you not think, but you're also being pressured to act fast by doctors or family members who are saying, well, if you don't go in and get this mastectomy or you don't go in and get this chemo and radiation right away, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very difficult situation to be in. So what I would recommend to people is, if at all possible, try to start looking into what options you have before you're diagnosed. And, you know, many people don't want to do that, and I understand that, but there's a lot of people out there who know someone with cancer or are trying to help someone with cancer,
mm-hmm.
and they may be able to start looking into this to help someone else and in the process learn about it for themselves. But, for instance, my book is a good place to start because I do cover so many different issues and so many different alternative approaches
yeah.
and explain
yeah.
how they work.
Yeah.
What I would like to say about conventional treatment is that, and when I talk about conventional, what I'm really talking about is mainstream medicine, which is what you'll get from your oncologist if you're diagnosed with cancer, and what the insurance companies recognize and pay for, and what the FDA has approved as a cancer treatment. All of that is sort of what goes into what a conventional treatment is.
Mm-hmm.
Alternative treatments, on the other hand, are not actually approved of by mainstream medicine. They're not accepted as treatments for cancer, and they are not approved by the FDA. So these are things, and they're not covered by your health insurance company, so
right.
these are things that may actually give you a better chance at living and recovering from your cancer, but they're not recognized by conventional medicine,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of an irony.
It is.
And what I discovered in my investigation is that one of the things people need to know is that when you're diagnosed with cancer, there are what are called the big three types of treatments in conventional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the big three are surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. Now, in recent years, hormone-blocking drugs have also become very common, so you might want to call it the big four. But basically, of the big four then, surgery is the only treatment that conventional medicine offers that is not toxic. In other words, chemotherapy, radiation, are both very toxic treatments,
mm-hmm.
and hormone-blocking drugs aren't considered particularly toxic, but they do have very very life-threatening side effects. So in a sense, you could look at them as a toxic treatment because
mm-hmm.
the hormone-blocking treatments can cause life-threatening strokes or blood clots, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're looking at with conventional medicine is surgery is the only thing that is actually not toxic and not really going to cause terrible side effects in other parts of your body.
Except these days, there's so many odd things and even death with by being put under that people are concerned about as well. So, I mean, even though it's not toxic like the other treatments, the drugs that are used to put to sedate you actually have fluoride in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good point. And many people would not want to go under that anesthesia then.
Yeah.
So that is a good point. And, of course, surgery can be very mutilating, for instance, a mastectomy.
Yes.
Or a colonoscopy or some. That wasn't quite the right word,
no,
if
I
you know what I mean. Or surgery for a brain tumor can actually cause some brain damage.
Yeah.
But by and large, what I found is that in conventional medicine, surgery actually has the best track record for long-term cure.
Uh-huh.
However, the problem is that surgery is never going to be able to achieve a long-term cure if your cancer has already metastasized.
Uh-huh.
And it's only really effective as a cure in very few cases where all of the cancer can be cut out, and that's usually in a case where the entire organ can be removed. So, for instance, if you have a thyroid cancer and you can take out the entire thyroid before the cancer has gone past the thyroid gland, or if you can do a lumpectomy and get an entire breast tumor caught early, or remove a testicle for testicular cancer or something like that, surgery can be curative in some of those cases. However, probably about three-quarters of Americans who are diagnosed with cancer already have cancer that has metastasized once they're diagnosed.
Let's talk about what metastasized means.
Okay. Metastasized means simply that the cancer has moved past the primary site.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there are a lot of people who, let's take the common cancers. A woman may have a very small breast cancer tumor caught early. And it would be considered a primary situation where the cancer has not spread anywhere else. It's just localized in that one little lump.
Mm.
And then sometimes a lumpectomy can be effective. However, you may want to use some follow-up treatment in case some of the cells got into the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, what happens with cancers is that they do tend to spread to other places pretty quickly. So what you have is 75% of all the people diagnosed have their primary cancer has already moved into other places, like into the lymph system, possibly into their bones, or for instance, lung cancer can actually spread easily into the brain, or kidney cancer can metastasize and spread into the lungs. And so what we have is that once the cancer has metastasized or spread to more than one site, in other words, it's no longer at its primary site of origin, then that's considered metastasized. And then in that kind of case, the surgery is not going to be curative, and the chemotherapy or radiation that doctors want to use is very rarely curative. Usually, once cancer is metastasized, a person has almost no chance of real long-term recovery using conventional medicine.
Uh-huh.
And so what we're really looking at is that only a very small percentage of people with cancer actually achieve a long-term real recovery through conventional medicine. Most of the conventional treatments are aimed at simply prolonging a person's life,
mm-hmm.
not actually
curing,
achieving a complete cure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of time that prolonging process goes along with a very poor quality of life because chemotherapy makes the patient very sick, or radiation burns the skin, things like that.
Uh-huh. And so I think one thing to remember is that, you know, if somebody has been diagnosed and if they do opt for surgery, there's still the whole cause that's behind that's not really being addressed.
That's right, and it's not even addressing the whole disease in many cases in the body. For instance, so many times when a doctor prescribes chemotherapy or radiation, they're only really treating the symptom, which is the primary tumor or tumors. And when it comes to cancer, that's very rarely all of the cancer that is in the body. Usually there are cells that have broken off and gone into the bloodstream or the lymph system and are in the process of growing in other places.
Yes, yes. So you've spoken in your book, written in your book about some of the environmental hazards that have been actively causing cancer, the five big environmental cancer triggers.
Ah, yes. Okay, well, one of those you've actually already brought up, which is fluoride.
Yes.
And fluoride is extremely carcinogenic.
I'm so glad you're saying this, because I was actually really happy to see that you brought up fluoride in your book, because we've been very focused here on keeping fluoride out of our drinking water. And, you know, it's very difficult to continually battle against the American Dental Association, who are constantly trying to put fluoride in our drinking water. But we're still clean right now. We're still safe.
Well, I really agree with you on that. And I know there's groups in a lot of other states that are also fighting against fluoride.
Yes.
And as you said, it's not in drinking water in every single community, but it is still in a lot of communities and counties around the country.
So you get the halo effect.
Yes, and those people that do have it in their drinking water are ingesting a very potent carcinogen.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the types of cancer that is most often caused by fluoride is types of bone cancers in boys for some reason.
Huh.
But it does contribute to all different types of cancers.
Yes.
And it is even a danger in our toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't realize is that the fluoride in our toothpaste, even Procter & Gamble, which puts out Crest toothpaste, has admitted that if a small child, for instance, a child up to 6 years old, ingests a complete family size of toothpaste, in other words, eats the entire family size of toothpaste,
yes,
that child will die due to the fluoride. And this is what Procter & Gamble has admitted. Now, of course, it's not likely that a child's going to eat an entire tube of toothpaste. But
kids do things. Like
do things, and they don't usually rinse as well as they should. So
right.
They tend to swallow more fluoride than adults do the toothpaste.
Right, and over a period of time, while they're ingesting that every morning and every night, a little bit of fluoride, it accumulates in the body, and the body really doesn't know how to flush that out.
Right. And another environmental carcinogen that's very prevalent still is asbestos.
Uh-huh.
Now, asbestos is still in many of our buildings in the insulation, and it breaks down into microfibers, very, very tiny things that you can't even see unless you're using an electron microscope. And these are basically like needles, these little fibers.
Yeah.
And we will actually, if you're working or living in a building that has asbestos insulation, it can actually get into the air conditioning air and come down and be something that you're breathing the entire time you're in that building. And asbestos, these tiny microfibers tend to get into the lungs and actually instigate lung cancer or
mm-hmm.
cancer of the esophagus or mouth or rectum or other. There's quite a variety of cancers that are actually caused by asbestos, and we still have an issue with many buildings containing asbestos, including many schools.
Really?
Elementary schools, that's correct.
Well, that's bad news.
Yeah.
How could we tell if there's asbestos? Is there any way to identify it?
You know, I think you would just have to probably talk to the owners of the building and have them do an investigation or something.
Mm-hmm.
The regulations against asbestos were, I can't remember exactly what year they went into effect, but a lot of the buildings in this country, including many of the high-rise business buildings, like, for instance, in New York City and other places like Chicago, were built before those regulations were put in,
uh-huh.
and many of the schools were built. So once those buildings are up and have asbestos, that stuff can still be leaking into the air. So I think you would just have to somehow, require that the owners of the building look into that.
Yeah, and see how if the building is a certain age, then, you know, do your investigation.
Yes. And asbestos can, basically smolder in the body and not cause the cancer for maybe up to 20 years.
Oh.
Now, there's another thing called fiberglass, which is very similar, and it's now being used in the insulation of many homes.
Yes.
Because we don't yet have as strict regulations on fiberglass as we do on asbestos.
Uh-huh.
And fiberglass does basically the same thing. It breaks down into these tiny microfibers and goes like needles through the air into our bodies and festers and irritates tissue until cancers develop.
Uh-huh.
The fourth large environmental factor that I mentioned in my appendix of the book is nuclear radiation. And this is something that a lot of people don't think about at all.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, we're not testing nuclear bombs right now in this country. However, we did do a lot of testing in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, and that put out a lot of nuclear radioactive dust that actually went into the atmosphere and was blown across our entire country through the winds. Now, Hawaii wasn't affected by the testing, I don't think, so much that we did on our continent. We did a lot of the testing in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
However, there were some tests done in the Pacific, and, of course, the nuclear bombs that went off in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I'm not sure which way the winds blew those.
Yes.
So probably every country in the world has received some of that nuclear radioactive dust.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that those radioactive particles get blown by the wind, and then they settle. And they settle in the dirt where crops are grown, or they settle into water, rivers, or reservoirs that go into people's drinking water. So we end up ingesting radioactive material through the plants or even through the animals that graze on grasslands.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And even in milk from the animals that graze on the grasslands.
Yes.
So
yes,
we end up ingesting that, and that type of radiation definitely is carcinogenic, and there's really no way right now of knowing how many people have developed cancer due to that, but we still have a lot of that radioactive material in our environment right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult thing to trace and to even know that it's there. I mean, it's for the normal layperson, there's just no way they would even know it.
That's correct.
I want to let our audience know that I'm talking with Tanya Harter-Pierce. She's the author of Outsmart Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work. Tanya, some of these treatments, alternative treatments to cancer diagnosis, are really fascinating. And one that I'd like you to embellish upon is the Dr. Kelly's enzyme treatment.
Yes. William Donald Kelly, he is deceased now. I think he died in his 90s, possibly. But he was actually a dentist who developed cancer himself.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was back in the 1970s. And he developed cancer that was in his pancreas, liver, and colon.
Ooh.
And the doctors that he went to said, basically, there is nothing we can do for you. And they didn't even try to treat him because they knew that his cancer was too extensive and they couldn't cure him at all.
Uh-huh.
So he ended up developing, and I'm not exactly sure all the details of how this came about, but he ended up developing his own approach based on using high doses of specific pancreatic enzymes. And the reason behind these enzymes is that, first of all, I'll say he used high doses of pancreatic enzymes plus detoxification techniques such as coffee enemas and also a strict diet to reinforce the nutritional support for the immune system. But the enzymes were a very clever approach of his because he found research that had been done which showed that another one of the common characteristics of all cancer cells is that they protect themselves from the immune system by they produce a protein coating around the cell.
Mm.
And this protein coating actually carries a negative electrostatic charge. Now, the white blood cells in our immune system also carry a negative electrostatic charge, and just like two magnets that are of equal charge repel each other,
mm-hmm.
the cancer cells repel the white blood cells of our body electrostatically. So they actually protect themselves from our immune system. Our normal healthy cells don't have this specific protein coating around them. So this is another way to outsmart your cancer by using high doses of pancreatic enzymes, because the enzymes are, they're proteolytic enzymes, which means they're protein eating. So they go throughout the bloodstream, and you have to take them in a certain way so that they don't just digest your food. You have to take them so they go through your stomach, into your intestines, and out into your bloodstream.
Not with your meals, but in between the meals. Maybe.
Exactly, on an empty stomach. And you then tend to use something, I think they're called enteric-coated supplements that help get past the stomach and go into the intestine. And then they go out into the bloodstream, and you flood your bloodstream with these enzymes, and they go around and find these cancer cells and break down that protein coating so that your immune system can attack
the
cancer.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
This is a great preventative. I mean,
it is. And a lot of people who learn about that's what I was trying to say. Once you learn about these approaches, you can use some aspects of them, because you can go out right now and buy some of these types of enzymes.
Right.
Now, Dr. Kelly himself claims to have cured tens of thousands of people of cancer using this approach, and I don't know if that's a little exaggerated, but I know he cured a lot of people, because I've actually come across cases that did his specific approach. Since he's passed away, there are two doctors in New York, Dr. Gonzalez and Dr. Isaacs, who are working together, and they're continuing Dr. Kelly's enzyme approach, and they're having phenomenal results. And one of the types of cancers that they specialize with, because no other approach is curing it very well, is pancreatic cancer. They have found that they can use this dietary enzyme approach to cure pancreatic cancer better than pretty much any other approach out there.
Yeah, that makes sense, because if the pancreas is under stress through the disease, it's not going to be producing the enzymes that it needs to break down the protein in the body. Therefore, it will accumulate.
Right.
So if you're using the enzymes, and I'm sure they're broad spectrum enzymes, which break down all the foods, the sugars, the proteins, the carbohydrate, everything.
Well, those would be more or less using digestive enzymes, and that probably does go along with the protocol.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do tend to refer people to Dr. Isaacs or Gonzalez for their specific approach, and they're really wonderful doctors doing great work.
Yeah, fantastic. This is wonderful news.
Yeah.
I've often heard about a person that has an alkaline blood balance. If their blood is alkaline compared to acidic, that cancer doesn't live in an alkaline environment. Can you shed some more light on that?
Yes. Cancer cells don't like an optimally alkaline environment. Now, what that means is that our bodies try to maintain optimum alkalinity, which is about 7.4 on the acid-alkaline scale.
And how do you do the testing? Do you use urine or saliva?
Well, there are both of those ways, and you can do either one. I tend to prefer the saliva approach because I think it's a little easier as an indication. The acidity of urine, first of all, urine is supposed to be very acidic, and it varies with what's going on in your body. If you're detoxing a lot of stuff, the acidity of the urine is going to change.
Yes.
Whereas the saliva tends to be a bit more stable.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of groups that do recommend saliva testing as the most optimal way.
And not to do it after you've brushed your teeth or eaten something.
Right. First thing upon rising in the morning with no coffee or anything.
Yes.
Where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. People need to understand is it's not the acidity of the blood, because the acid-alkaline balance of the blood will almost always stay exactly the same.
Uh-huh.
Because if it doesn't, then the blood going through the heart, if it's too acid or too alkaline, will cause problems for the heart.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually die of heart failure if your blood acidity changes too much.
Uh-huh.
So what the body does is to maintain an optimum alkalinity or acid-alkaline balance in the blood, what it does is it will rob the rest of the body of alkalizing minerals when it needs them. And so we need to get enough alkalizing minerals in our diets, things like calcium, magnesium, potassium. All of these are very alkalizing minerals. And if you get a sufficient amount of those in your diet, you will be able to maintain an optimum acid-alkaline balance.
Uh-huh.
What we find is today with modern living, people don't get enough of those alkalizing minerals, and they tend to eat too many of the processed foods, which tend to be very acidifying. Things like sugar and dairy tend to be acid-forming and acidifying. And there's a lot of other things. I actually have a list of foods in my book that contribute to either an acid or an alkaline state.
Uh-huh.
And the reality with cancer is that because, and this goes back to the fact that cancer cells are primarily anaerobic, because they're primarily anaerobic, they don't use oxygen. Now, oxygen tends to be very prevalent in alkaline, in optimally alkaline solutions.
Uh-huh.
But when you come to more acidic solutions, they tend to repel or expel oxygen, and they have less oxygen, and the cancer cells like an environment with less oxygen. They survive better that way.
Right. Did you do any research on oxygen therapy?
Yes, there is one chapter on oxygen therapy. I felt it's an important topic to tell people about. However, I didn't focus a lot of pages on it because there aren't a lot of good places to go. There is one hospital in Mexico called Hospital Santa Monica.
Yes.
Just across the border, in, you know, past Southern California.
In Tijuana?
I believe it's down around there.
Yeah.
And it's doing some great work using various forms of oxygenation therapy. And but again, I tried to spend more time on some of the approaches that were easier to get or could be self-administered at home. The oxygenation therapy, though, does help fight against cancer by flooding the body with oxygen, and it's done in several different ways. There's a hyperbaric oxygen chamber that that some places can administer, and people go into this chamber, and it forces oxygen into the body through the skin. And there's also hydrogen peroxide therapy that's done, and a couple of other ways.
Well, you can have it injected as well.
Yes.
Into the bloodstream, and then you can take the blood out as an alternative treatment. You can actually draw out certain amounts of blood, put it through the oxygenation process with ultraviolet.
Oh, and ultraviolet light, exactly.
Yes.
So there are some good clinics that are doing this type of work. I haven't found it to be one of the more powerful ones, though it has. I have come across cases of great recoveries that way.
Mm-hmm. I know in Germany and Europe, other parts of Europe, they've been using it for over 100 years with fantastic results. In fact, when Ronald Reagan had colon cancer, he didn't hang around in the United States to get chemotherapy or radiation. He went straight to Germany and got ozone treatments.
I didn't even realize that.
He didn't hang around here. He knew he wouldn't probably survive the treatment.
Interesting.
In the West.
And there's some good hyperthermia done, which is heating up the body to a temperature where cancer cells can't survive. A lot of that's being done in Europe, too.
Yes.
I actually did try to focus on in the book more on approaches that are easily obtainable to Americans,
just
to make it something that, you know, is a resource for people in this country.
Absolutely.
And also explain how each one of these works.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that the kinds of cases I came across were really quite amazing. For instance, I've got a case of one man who had stomach cancer. And he had a very, very advanced tumor to the point where it was blocking his duodenum, blocking the entrance from his stomach into his intestines. And so he could not eat or drink, and he had to be tube-fed, and he was being given chemo at the same time and losing weight rapidly. And the doctors basically got to a point where they had to tell him and his family that their chemotherapy was no longer working. And that the tumor was just as big as it ever was and still blocking his duodenum. And so what the oncologist finally told this man is that the only option they had left was to surgically remove this man's entire stomach.
Gosh.
Yeah, and then they were going to reconnect the intestine up to his esophagus and try to somehow form a new stomach, but they didn't have much to work with.
Oh, my goodness.
And this man didn't think, he was only in his 40s, he didn't think that was going to give him much quality of life. Luckily, his wife actually found out about cesium high pH therapy, which is another approach that is a natural approach involving natural cesium and potassium. And it's based on the fact, again, that cancer cells are primarily anaerobic and prefer an acidic environment because cesium is one of the most alkalizing minerals available, and it actually is readily taken up by cancer cells and alkalizes them to death, alkalizes the cancer cells until they die. And so what this man's wife did was she got this liquid ionic form of cesium and potassium, and she couldn't have him drink it orally, which is the normal way it's taken, because he couldn't take anything into his stomach, so she started spraying it on his skin. And within a few days, he heard some rumbling in his stomach, and he realized that things were starting to pass through, and then she was able to give it to him orally, and within about 3 to 4 months, this man's cancer was completely gone.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's continued a maintenance dose for a while of the cesium therapy, but then went off it and just maintained a healthy diet and normal living, and he's been cancer-free for a couple years now.
Yay.
There's a case in my book of a woman with metastasized kidney cancer. Now, one of the things about kidney cancer is you can remove a kidney if the other kidney is strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
So you can sometimes get rid of all the cancer if it hasn't metastasized yet. And her kidney was removed. However, her cancer had metastasized to both of her lungs. And at that point, the doctors had nothing to offer her. They said, basically, there is no treatment that can cure you that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So she found out about this Protocell formula. And this was somewhere around 10 years ago. And she used the Protocell formula. It got rid of all the metastasized cancer in her lungs.
God.
And she's been cancer-free for many years.
Awesome.
There's just and brain cancer cases. It's just phenomenal. So there's really some powerful options. And what people need to know is that if they develop cancer, their best options for recovery may not be what their oncologists tell them.
Right. Get the book, Outsmart Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work, by Tanya Harter Pierce, and it will help to educate you and relieve you of a lot of the stress and the fear that comes along with a diagnosis like that.
Yes, and I also have a chapter talking about how to deal with cancer, and there are 8 important questions to ask your oncologist if you are diagnosed with cancer, so it helps you know how to deal with your oncologist. Outsmart Your Cancer is available on Amazon.com or also can be ordered through my website, which is outsmartyourcancer.com.
Uh-huh.
And so there's really a lot of information in the book, even a chapter on how to evaluate conventional medicine, where I go into more detail about radiation and chemotherapy options.
Yeah. Tanya, thank you. Really, really thank you. Thank you for doing this work and bringing the word out to the public so that you're going to help a lot of people to survive with this information.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. West. It was a real pleasure being here today.
Thank you. Great. You continue your good work.
All right. Take care.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.